Hey, I would like to welcome Sam Daly Harris to the program. I just met Sam this minute, but I'm aware of a book he wrote that I think is pretty important and pretty interesting, and it's called Reclaiming Our Democracy: Every Citizen's Guide to Transformational Advocacy. So, Sam, that previous conversation with my earlier guest was not exactly uplifting. So you're here to uplift us. What can we do in this very, very challenging time?
Okay, well, when I talk to folks, I usually lay out the stuff we know first. In other words, protest, critically important, lawsuits, very important, motivating voter turnout, critically important. My area is a fourth that few people know about: transformational advocacy, where you work to change an issue and you're changed in the process, not the transactional advocacy of sign the petition, transaction complete. But transformational advocacy is where you're trained, encouraged, and succeed at doing things as an advocate you never thought you could do, like meet with a member of Congress and bring them on board to your issue. And when you do that, you see yourself differently. You see yourself in a new light. I don't know if you want me to give an example.
Well,
Go ahead.
what if you meet with that member of Congress and they ignore you, as so often happens?
Right. So when I'm coaching a group that's meeting with a member of Congress who opposes their bill, I have them ask three questions. One, we know you don't support this bill. What would it take to change your mind?
And
And so you listen.
they say big contributions that match the ones I'm getting
Oh,
from
okay. Then,
Boeing.
second question, could you say more about that?
Me?
Third question,
Oh, I see right
well,
there.
why do you think, what would it take to change your mind? Could you say more about that? Why do you think that is? And I tell you this little story. I was talking to a friend. It's a longer story, but he's meeting in a couple of weeks with his member of Congress, who's a MAGA Republican. In New North Carolina. And he said, and his focus is on global and domestic poverty, my friend, as is mine too. And he said, I read on Facebook where the congressman met with the Rotary Club and they talked about eliminating po polio around the world. So I know that's one thing I'm going to talk to him about. And when he, just before he was sworn in 2023, we met with him. And we talked about the child tax credit. And he said, I can relate to that. I grew up with a single mom. We had our car repossessed. We had the electricity turned off. So this is my friend who knows he's going in to meet his MAGA Republican, but he's looking for an entry point here or a route in there. And this is not about a one and done. This is about building a relationship. So
And so I mean, in my experience, you can sometimes find that link with a member of Congress, and then beyond that link, they get kind of turned off to wherever you want to take them next if it's not something that they're comfortable with. And I can speak about that from the other point of view too. I was a legislator for 14 years, and I was always critical of gambling, especially the state lottery. I didn't like the state, running this what I thought was kind of a scam program. And the head of the lottery knew that I was really laid back and didn't wear a tie. So he came to meet with me in jeans and a shirt, and he talked about his fondness for Ireland, because that's my second home. And we had a great conversation there. And then he got into details about what he wanted me to support relevant to the lobby. And my view didn't change at all. I was glad to have the conversation about things that we had in common. So, I mean, maybe it works sometimes, but for me, on me, it didn't work. And I've seen where it doesn't work on members of Congress, but maybe you've got examples of where it does work.
Well, I'll give you a couple, but let's start with this one. So it's a longer story again, but the head of organizing for climate change for the United Church of Christ in the United States, I started coaching him in a tiny team. the month Trump was sworn in the second time, and they started their first four chapters 2 months later, a year ago, March. I think they're up to about 15 chapters right now. The point is, what they started to work on was President Trump called for a 55% cut to the Environmental Protection Agency. And so they were lobbying to avoid this cut. Now, they had, when they started last August, they had maybe nine chapters, and then they had their 11th last November. But they got dozens of letters to the editor published, always with the congressional switchboard phone number in their letters, somewhere in the Boston Globe. They had a dozen or so meetings with congressional offices. They had four op-eds published. And in late January, President Trump signed a bill that cut the EPA by 3.5%, 16 times smaller than his proposed 55% cut. Now, they know that they're new and they weren't the ones who did all this, really, but they were in there. Their letters that were published and the letters they wrote that weren't published, they know that they're part of the action. And so that's an example of, again, I'm not going to pretend this brand new little outfit of a small number of chapters made this change, but they didn't feel like they were just standing on the sidelines watching a car crash, but they were in there trying to get something done. I could give other examples too.
I agree with you. I think I subscribe to a quote by Mahatma Gandhi, attributed to Mahatma Gandhi, that every little thing you do, even if it seems insignificant, it's very important that you do it, because you never know. I've seen this before. I've looked out at trees as they get covered by snow, which is a very refreshing thought here on a 90-degree day in Iowa. And at some point, there's one snowflake that falls on that weak branch and it breaks. And are you that snowflake?
Yeah,
I know
yeah,
snowflake has other meanings,
yeah.
other contexts in the political realm, but to me, that snowflake is a pretty powerful thing. And again, what you're talking about is, being that one person that might at some point push somebody over to take the action that you really want them to take.
Yes, and then the question becomes, how do you stick with it to be that, perhaps that snowflake and not give up and throw your hands up kind of thing? And that's why, if I can, when I'm urging people to what to look for when they're looking for an organization that works to deliver transformational advocacy, I have them look for three things. One is recruitment and community building. They bring new people in, not just to build an eBlast list, but to form them into local chapters so you're not working alone. And the community building might be a monthly whole of organization webinar with guest speakers, Q&A, inspiration, recruitment and community building. A second ingredient is training. How do you get the meeting with the elected? How do you plan for the meeting? What do you ask for in the meeting? The third is breakthroughs. The organization actually encourages their members to have breakthroughs, to do things they think they can't do. And there's a drawing in Reclaiming Our Democracy, a small circle labeled Your Comfort Zone. And right next to it is a much larger circle labeled Where the Magic Happens. And so you need to find an organization that will encourage you out of your comfort zone and then help you stick with it, rather than I tried once and it didn't work and I'm out of here.
Where do you put political action in the spectrum of things that one might engage in to make a difference? By political action, I mean helping a candidate that you like who's running for office yourself.
Yeah.
That type of engagement. Where do you put that in the
Well,
process?
critical. I mean, again, when I was saying protests, lawsuits, and motivating voter turnout, all critical. Now, some people might do two of those or one of whatever. You have to decide. What we can't decide is to stay out. And if I could give this example, I talk about the American Slumber Party. When Miami, Florida voted its first Democratic mayor in nearly 30 years last December, the voter turnout was 21%. 79% stayed home. When Mamdani was elected mayor of New York City, the largest voter turnout since 1969, the voter turnout was 42%.
That's really
58%
high.
stayed home.
I know
Well,
it's crazy, but it's really high compared to what you I mean,
okay. I
it's a shame
understand.
that that's high, you know?
But more people stayed home than voted
Sure.
in terms of,
Yeah.
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 So we have this American slumber party, and we have to decide whether we're going to join into that or join in the waking up.
Yeah. Well, very good. And as a fellow author, I know how tough it is to write a book, so congratulations.
Thank you. Yes.
And yeah, you're again, the book you wrote is called Reclaiming Our Democracy: Every Citizen's Guide to Transformational Advocacy, and it's available at local bookstores
It
or through
is.
the author directly.
And the only other thing is that reclaimingourdemocracy.com, there's a sign up to learn more where people can let me know they'd like my help in connecting them with one of these organizations that I've been mentioning that delivers
And what
transformational
is that
advocacy.
website?
Reclaimingourdemocracy.com.
Got it. Reclaimingourdemocracy.com. All right. Hey, Sam, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Folks, we've been talking with Sam Daly Harris.